This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Program Yarchei Kala, that's intensive, a week of intensive learning where every night of the week we'll have a different speaker at the shul, and she's already placed two of the finest Torah teachers and speakers in the city for that week. So if you could keep your eyes open for it, the Monday night shul will be one of the nights, and we'll have the other nights with the visiting rabbis. That the information will be on the PJC website. I'm sure emails will go out. Those of you who aren't on our email list, please see that you are on it, and check the website and the telephone messaging system. July 23rd to 26th is when it is. Good. Last week we dealt with the parent-child interface from the point of view of raising children, the parent's focus on the child. And this evening we'll be talking about the child's focus on the parent. And I like to talk about the responsibilities of raising children and elevating parents. Parents don't need to be raised, but they do need to be elevated. And it's interesting and quite sad that you could walk into a home, it's feasible, and you might have had experiences such as this, I certainly have very, very recently even, where a person might be talking in the most beautiful way about a piece of antique furniture that they have, about a sentimental memento that's sitting on the shelf, why it's so important to them, how they position it and how they value it. And if you say, why? What's it? It looks like a sort of a second-hand piece of furniture. It looks like a used piece. And they will say, you don't appreciate age and you don't appreciate tradition. You don't appreciate something classical. And in the same breath, they could be cheapening their parents. It's so odd that we express our love of age and authenticity and connection with the past and sentimentality on inanimate objects. But we go into crisis about what kind of honor do we really have to show parents. Even the Gemara, one of the Gemaras we're going to learn, the question of the Gemara is a strange question. It doesn't say define the law of honoring parents. It doesn't say what is the law. Ad heichon, how far do you have to go? It doesn't ask that question about lots of other laws, and it certainly doesn't ask the question about the treasuring of antiques. It doesn't say, nobody's worried about that. Nobody goes into any kind of existential crisis about how far are you supposed to go to show respect to antiquities. And different countries have laws about respect to antiquities, and you can't damage them, and you can't steal them, and you can't treat them in any way shabbily. The only country that I know of that has laws about human antiquities is Japan, where there's such a thing as a national treasure. Japan, there are people, ordinary people in the street, who are called national treasures. It's like a medal that is given to people. It's one of the highest honors. There's no money attached to it. You don't receive a prize, but you receive the status, and you're called Mr. So-and-so, national treasure. They understand that people can be national treasures. And yet in most other civilizations, we're troubled by it. Do we really have to show our parents so much honor? And is it really necessary? And how far do you really have to go? And what if they weren't such great parents? We will find any way to argue ourselves out of the need to show enormous deference to our parents. Grandparents. And so it's an odd mitzvah, the mitzvah of honoring parents. then we need to have some kind of understanding of it. What I'm going to do this evening, because you've heard all the stuff on honoring parents, and that honoring the parents is the fifth commandment, and the first five are about man and God, and the second five are about man, and this is on the God side because the parents represent God, and we've heard it all. We know it all. It doesn't help. Nobody changes their lives because they heard, but Kabed es avicha ves emecha is on the right-hand side of the Ten Commandments. Nobody goes home and treats their parents differently because of that. So what I'm going to suggest is that we do a slightly different format tonight. And that is that I spend a few minutes asking those of you who would be courageous and honest enough to put issues up front. What are some of the problems? Then we'll learn some Gemara. And then we'll revisit the issues. I'm not going to give you theories. I'm just going to learn the Gemaras with you. So you see what the Gemara says. What does the Torah say on the subject? And then we'll revisit the some of the issues that you've raised and see if through the light of the Gemaras we've read there's some deeper understanding about the issues. So I'm not talking about the easy stuff. I'm talking about the difficult stuff. About the points or that point in the relationship to parents that stretch the limits of patience and tolerance, and where you question whether you're even supposed to do that. Because the others are easy. To honor a parent comes naturally in the ordinary kind of honoring. But where we hit the limits, where it requires of us enormous forbearing, there we start to question, is this really necessary? How far should we go? How far are we meant to go? So is there anybody who would like to put issues up that could illustrate some of the tensions? If you're talking about raising children, things flow very quickly. I've got this problem with a child, and I had this problem with my child. Come, talk about problems with your parents. I want to hear about real, hard, difficult problems with your parents. And let's see what the halacha, what the Torah says about them. Okay, I'll take that one and then that one. You don't have to say your father, you could say one's father.
Well,
right, <that's> okay.
When they, in their age, progress to becoming a child again, and as a parent to a child, you're dealing with your parent as a child. And it's difficult because you're giving them love and respect, and yet they're at a point where they're really incompetent to deal with the realities of their world.
Okay, one issue. How do you show respect when your parent has regressed into a type of senility, a type of childishness? How do you keep that same relationship of parent to an elderly person who's acting like a child? Is how I understand your question, your issue. So. Okay, try and articulate a bit further. And therefore? What happens if you've made a choice on religious lifestyle and your parents get in the way? Disapprove or judgmental? How do you keep the respect going? Okay, what about when they're disapproving of other choices and judgments, when they're very judgmental parents that judge everything that you do? And whenever you make a decision, you see in your mind's eye one of your parents saying, you shouldn't do that, or you should do that, or don't do that, or what will come of you if you do that. It's a slightly different issue, but also, how does one honor a parent who one finds to have been enormously limiting of oneself in their judgmentalism? And with a particular nuance on the religious area, which we can deal with. Good question. We'll deal with that. With that too. Good question. If we learn that the way to love is rebuke, then is one permitted to rebuke a parent? An important question. So that's taking the judgmentalism one much further and saying, what about when it's real abuse? Does the child still have to show honor and respect? I want you each to remember your questions, because when we've learnt the Gemaras, then you'll have to come back at me if they're not answered, if it's not dealt with, because I won't be able to remember everyone. That's not what you're meaning. It impinges on your own life. Your parent keeps on asking you to do things for him, knowing or her, knowing that you won't refuse, and that it becomes manipulative. Some of these we'll have to come back at specifically. How much? Do you give your parents? Okay, the answer to that depends on age. Depends on the age of the child, obviously. Are you talking about an adult child, or are you talking about an adult child? Okay. Well, a child, you can be a child when you're 60, but you are your parents' child, isn't it? Doesn't matter how old you are, that you're talking about an adult. Okay. Let's look at some of the Gemaras and see if there's some kind of approach that we can learn from it. And there's no particular order. The Shir is not a structured sequence, but rather a collection of insights from which we'll draw our principles. Firstly, it's important to note that nowhere in the Torah does it say you have to love your parents. It says you love your neighbor as yourself, so like you love anybody else, you love your parent. But there is no obligation to love your parents. There's no obligation to love your children either. But loving children is natural. Loving parents is not always natural. There is an obligation to honor them, not necessarily to love them. And a lot of the questions, if you think carefully about them, result from a confused boundary between love and honoring. So let's get that first clear. Don't have to love, you have to honor. What is the nature of that honoring? The Gemara says that the word kabed es avicha v'isenecha, honor, that word kabed, honor, show weight. It comes from kaved, also weightiness. Give weightiness to your mother and your father. The Ne'emar, and it also says kaved es Hashem mehoncha, honor God with your possessions. From the same use of kaved, says the Gemara, hishvo hakosuv kibud avayim lechvod hakadosh baruch hu. It parallels the honor we have to show to a parent to the honor we have to show to God. So we're not talking here about an interpersonal honoring, and that's why that this is the fifth commandment. It's not just a question of a nice little concept, a nice little idea. The honor that we're talking about, parental honor, is of the sort. It's of the same category of the honor we show to God. It's not honor to another human being. This is honor to an idea, This is honor to a principle. This is honor to a value. This is honor to a belief. And that's very important when we come onto questions of are they deserving of the honor? Are they not deserving of the honor? You're honoring parenthood. That's number one. Whether you like your parent or you don't like your parent, that's your only vehicle to express honor of parenthood. And if you don't honor your parents, you don't really honor any parents. And then you're not honoring the concept of parenthood, and that damages the honoring of God. And we'll understand why in a moment. The Amar, the Gemara says further, there's also an obligation not only to honor, but also to fear, to have awe for one's parents. Ish imo v'aviv tiro, every man should fear his mother and father. The Amar es Hashem Elokecho tiro, and exactly the same phrase, you shall fear God. Hishvakos of moiras avaim l'moiras hamokum. Says the Gemara, again, the fear of a parent is of the same category, the same nature as the fear of God. When you're showing fear, when you're showing awe, respect to a parent, you're showing it to the concept parent, and that's partially to the concept God. And why? The reason is that there are two elements of godliness that parenthood has. The one is parenthood generates obligation, and the other is parenthood generates life. And God generates obligation, and God generates life. There's no one else really who, by virtue of the relationship, constantly is generating life and obligation. Yes, society can get together and create obligations. A person can do something, can lend somebody money, that creates an obligation. But the moment a child is born, the moment a baby is born, it's born obligated. It's born obligated only to two entities, parent and God. At that moment, it has no obligation to anybody else. The obligations then arise out of relationships. But at the moment of birth, a baby is born into the world, obligated to parents because they bore him, they gave him life. Mr. Lippman, him or her? Him or her life. I said to Mr. Lippman, when I use the word him, please read him or her. It's just that if I'm talking about hims and hers and I say him and or her every time, the shiur takes an extra 10 minutes, we lose some important time just for political correctness, I refuse to do it. And so when I say him, it means her as well. The baby is born, and Hashem, and immediately the baby is born with obligations to God, to parents. Obligations in reciprocation for life. He's born indebted. A child is born indebted. There is not a moment in life that we live without debt. It is absolutely natural to live in debt. Not financial debt, but moral debt. And the recognition of that indebtedness is the source of the kovod and the yirah, of the honor and the fear. But it's not only obligation in the sense of indebtedness, it's obligation in the sense of authority. I mentioned to you, I think in the last year, that it is not out of place for a parent to say to a child, when the child says, but why can't I do this? Everybody does. It's not out of the place for the parent to say, yes, everybody does, but we don't. And you don't need any more explanation than that. You don't need to go into any more great detail, because usually the child will understand that the we don't is a higher level of achievement. It's not a lower level of achievement. It's there are things that other people do that aren't 100%, and yeah, people do it, but we don't. We hold ourselves to higher standards. And that's a source of pride to a child. That's not a source. Child rebels a little bit, kicks against it a little bit, feels a little bit done out of it, but there's a sense of pride at the same time. Very seldom can one have the feeling of pride without the sweat of toil, of achievement. You can't have the one without the other. So the pride that a child feels when you say, our family doesn't do that, comes at a cost, but the child bears that cost. God creates obligation. Once again, those are the two sources that can create that kind of obligation. Anybody else who creates an obligation contracts the obligation. There aren't other relationships that can autocratically create obligation. God creates obligation. This is how it is. This is what you shall do. And if you don't do it, I will punish you. And if you want to ask why from an educational perspective, I will teach you the answer. If you want to ask why from a challenging perspective, I will not deal with your question. And the parent is exactly the same. This is what you'll do. And if you don't, there'll be a consequence. If you want to understand why, I'm prepared to teach you. If you're challenging me, it's the end of the conversation. There's no conversation. There is no other relationship that comes with that authority. And without that authority, you cannot raise a child. Without that authority, you cannot be responsible for a child. It comes in parenthood. And the child is asked to recognize that. You're indebted to your parents, and that's the kovod. That's the honor you show them. They are an authority, and that is the fear you show them. And where does their authority come from? God's authority comes from God. Where does parental authority come from? Who gave them that authority? Well, they got it from their parents. They were raised by parents who taught them how to live. And yes, we're dealing in fractured generations now, where not everybody was raised by parents who taught them how to live. In fact, most people were not. And that's a very serious situation in which we find ourselves right now. But that's not the norm. Might be the average, but it's not the norm. The norm is that a child is raised in a home where parents teach the child what's right and wrong, what a value system is, what's okay and what isn't okay. So the authority that the parent gives over or uses in order to teach the child is an authority that parent got from his parents. And where did his parents get it from? From their parents. And where did their parents get it from? And so you go back and back and back and back. And you get to Moshe, and you get to the Torah, and you get to Sinai, and you get to Avraham, and you get to God. That's where you get that from. So the authority, it's not just a matter of we need to treat our parents as some kind of God. This isn't just semantics, the way the Torah phrases it. That which parents generate, the power of life and the power of moral authority, they get from God. And the denial of that respect and that honor is a denial of the godly transmission of tradition in the sense of knowing what's right and wrong. That the vehicle of families is the vehicle that God has chosen to pass through societies. The Gemara goes further and says, in fact, God puts the honoring of a parent above his own honor. Because when it says honor God, it says honor God mehoncha, from your possessions. You give charity, you give truma, you give maaser, if you've got. But when it comes to honoring parents, that obligation is not a monetary obligation. It's there whether or not you've got assets, whether or not you've got possessions. That obligation stands on its own. Now, interestingly, the Gemara points out that the law of fearing, in the law of fearing parents, where the mother is put before the father, ish imo v'aviv tiro. Each man should fear his mother and his father. When it comes to respecting, it says each man should respect his father and his mother. And what's the reason for that, says the Gemara? It's well known before the creator of the world that a child will naturally, leaving aside the Torah, will naturally honor his mother more than his father. Because the mother builds the child up and encourages the child and comforts the child and communicates with the child and talks to the child, and the child responds. So the Torah says, when it comes to honor, your father gets as much as your mother. It's equally known to the creator of the world that a child fears his father naturally more than his mother. Why do you think? I would have thought because the father disciplines the child. No, says the Gemara. Because the father teaches the child Torah. And the child puts the father in a place of awe and respect, because the child grows and learns new insights and discovers wonders through the father. And so he has a respect for the father. He honors his mother, he respects his father. Torah comes and says, no, you honor your mother as much as your father. In other words, what the Torah is telling us, that the source of that honoring should not be the fact that she makes you feel good. That's not why you honor her. The source of your respecting is not because he teaches you Torah. That's not the reason. That's a natural thing. The Torah is asking you to go beyond that. And even though your father does not communicate with you quite as softly as your mother does, he gets the same honor. And even though your mother might not have taught you the same Torah that your father does, she gets the same respect. Because we're dealing here with the concept of parenthood, not with the one-on-one relationship that you happen to have had with your particular father or mother. Let's go further. Firstly, what is respect? Eze moreve, eze kibud. What do we mean when we say show awe, show honor? What are the actions that elicit, what are the actions that express this honor and this respect? The Gemara lays it out. What is moreve? How do you show awe? Lo'omed bimekoma. You don't stand in the place that your father usually stands, or your mother. Below Yoshev Bimkoma, you don't sit in the chair that they usually occupy. Below Soyseres Devorov, you never contradict them. Below Machrio, and when they're involved in an argument, you don't decide. That's Moira. Moira is creating a space that you don't invade. That's what Moira is. When you talk about holding somebody in awe and respect, it's giving them a space around them that you don't invade. Physical space, where they sit, where they stand, and an emotional space, where they are. Kibud, so those are all restrictions, things that you don't do. The way you show respect is by not doing things to that person that you do to other people. The way you normally interact with people, you don't interact in that same way with somebody that you respect. What is kibud? Kibud is active, not passive, not withdrawal. Honoring is ma'achilu mashkeu, you provide them with food and drink. Ma'abishu mechaseu, you provide them with clothing. Machnisu moitzi, you transport them, you carry them, you bring them in, you ask them to go through the door first, you show them respect and honor that way. However, says the Gemara, when we're told ish imoy va'aviv tiro, the very next words in the same sentence is ve'es shabsoisai tishmoiru, but always keep Shabbos. Meaning, respect a parent does not mean obey them when obedience to the parent means disobedience to God. If there's any kind of a choice, clearly, you don't say, but I respect my parent, what can I do? God says I must respect my parent. No. If a parent asks of an individual to disobey God, that's not required, that's not called parental respect. That's not respecting the concept of parent. If you see that your father is doing something wrong, he's committing a sin, interesting question, I mean, that's a question that Desi asked you, but how do you deal with confrontation, how do you deal with rebuke? Yes, there is rebuke, but in a very different way. You don't rebuke a parent the same way you would rebuke somebody else. Again, there's a space that you preserve, there's a space you don't enter. For example, never say to your father, father, you've just done an avera, you've just done a sin. You would never say that. Hello, you would say kach kosuv batoiro. The Gemara suggests you should say to him, father, after all, it says the following in the Torah. It says the Gemara, but Matzaira there, that's also confronting him in a way that would cause him terrible pain. And Akach Yomelo, Mikra Shekos of Batero Kachu. So you position it even more softly. I was looking in the Torah as a matter of interest today, and I noticed the following. Father knows what you mean. Father knows exactly what you mean, but you haven't confronted in a way that there's damage done to that relationship of honor. Because when honor is breached, it's hard to reconstruct. and sometimes in moments of anger or disappointment, one breaches that honor. Once you go into that space that you've kept vacant out of honor and respect, it's very difficult to pull out of it and to leave that space intact. And so one has to be careful. You're communicating to the Father. You're not supposed to back off and leave it undealt with. But it has to be dealt with in a way that is far less confrontational, so that the dignity of the relationship remains intact and is in no way damaged or impaired. Interestingly too, the Gemara says, even though the honor of a parent is considered like the honor of God himself, Rabboi Kodem Loi L'chol Dover, the honor of one's teacher of Torah is even greater. And if there's ever a choice between an honor to the teacher of one's Torah, that doesn't just mean somebody taught one for a year. It means somebody whose view of life has been molded by a particular individual's Torah teachings. Then the honor that you are obligated to that person is greater than the honor that you're obligated to your own parents, unless your parents were also your teacher. Then, of course, that becomes the highest form of honor of all. I mentioned a little earlier the Gemara that says, Kibud ad heichan kibud aveim. How far does it go? Gemara in Kedushin on Daf Lamed Aleph. Bo minei meravula. They asked Ravula, ad heichan kibud aveim. How far does it go? Omalahim, he said to them. Or Shalu is Rabbi Lezer. They asked Rabbi Lezer, how far does kibud aveim go? Tzu uru'u meh oso oved kochovim echod l'oviv ba'ashkelon. Well known Gemara. If you want to know how far kibud aveim goes, you can study the action of a non-Jew, an idol worshipper who lived in Ashkelon. And from here is quoted in the Gemara, and this becomes the case study that sets the limits of kibud aveim, of honoring a parent. The Damo ben Nesino Shmo, his name was Damo ben Nesino. What happened? Bikshu mimenu chachomin avonim la'ifoid b'shishim ribo ischar. The chachomim wanted to purchase from him precious stones. He was a gem dealer. And they wanted to purchase precious stones from him to the value of 60 times 10,000, that's $600,000 or whatever it was, of profit. That's how much money he was going to make out of the deal. And his father was asleep, and the key to the safe was under the father's pillow. The Lord Siara. And the son said, sorry, I cannot open the safe. It would mean disturbing my father's sleep. And I cannot do that. It's interesting, the whole concept of disturbance of sleep. Rabbi Yalopian used to say that it's one of the worst types of theft, because any other theft you can pay back. There's no way you can pay back a person whose sleep you've disturbed, and you don't know what the consequence of that is. You don't know. And sometimes, you know how it is with sleep, sometimes being woken up a minute before you would normally have woken up, even that last minute might have been very valuable sleep time, and you don't know what kind of impact that could have on the rest of his day and what happens. Sleep, the deprivation of sleep, even of a moment of sleep, is a theft of one of the most serious kinds, because it cannot be repaid. And Damo simply said, I cannot disturb my father's sleep. It doesn't come into the question. A year later, they went and bought the stone somewhere else. A year later, he had a pora aduma, he had a red heifer born into his flock. And a red heifer, that's once in a lifetime, or once in many lifetimes. It's used in the Beis HaMikdash. It's very, very rare to find. And it's worth anything. We would pay anything for one, because you cannot keep the temple service without it. Nichnasu Chachomi Yisrael Etzloi. So the Chachomim came back to him to buy the red heifer. Omar lehem yodea ani bachem shemanim vakesh michem kol momen shebo ilum atem lo yisnim li. I know that I could ask of you any money in the world and you would pay me. But I also know that the reason I've got this red heifer is to make up for the deal I lost when I honored my father. So all I want from you is $600,000. I just want to make up what I lost from not disturbing my father. That was a non-Jew of incredibly high morality in terms of his dealing with people and dealing with his parents. And then the Gemara says, there's no mitzvah for him. He's a non-Jew, he doesn't have a Torah, he doesn't have to observe the mitzvahs. So his keeping of this honor, this honoring of his parents, is his own morality, it's his own value system. It's not a Torah obligation. And he goes to that length. How much more so if we are obligated, that we've got to go to that length and beyond? For didn't we learn, it is greater when one is obligated to do a mitzvah than when one does one voluntarily. And that's an interesting concept altogether, and it applies very much to the honoring of a parent. Normally one thinks that a voluntary act is a greater act than one of obligation. But the Torah doesn't see it that way. The Torah regards an act committed out of a sense of obligation as being on a higher moral level than one committed out of choice. At the end of the day, choice, I'm the authority. Free to choose not to. Obligation, I'm acknowledging another authority. And more so, says Tosfos also, that when it's an obligation, when doing the mitzvah, and even when not doing the mitzvah, doeg umitztair yosef pen yavur, mimisha ein mitzvah, there's downside. If there's an obligation and you don't do it right, if there's an obligation and you don't do it at all, if there's an obligation and you miss out a part of it, you don't come quite to the maximum of what you're capable of, there's a claim on you, you failed. There's a part of you that's failed. But if you volunteered, whatever you've done has been a charitable act. So there's no downside, there's no risk. And that's the difference between having the Torah and having one's own moral system. Having one's own moral system, there's no downside. Whatever you do is very great because it's something you've done from yourself, you've worked out from yourself, you've chosen to do it. That's true. The choice side of it is greater. But there's choice in fulfilling an obligation. You don't have to fulfill an obligation. You can say no. God obligated me and I'm saying no. We do it all the time. So there's choice in obligation as well. But there's also fear in obligation. There's fear of a downside. If I don't do it to my maximum, I'm not doing it. There's something that I should be doing, that I'm expected to do, and that I'm not doing. In that sense, when we talked about parental control, the parental creation of obligation, that's part of it. A parent creates an expectation. And that comes up to some of the judgmental issues. Part of it, parents' job is to create standards and to say, I expect this from you. And if you don't get there, I'm disappointed. That's part of what a parent does. That creates in the child the downside. But it's not just a voluntary act. The child understands, I risk disappointing my parent. I don't want to do that. I would like to exceed my parents' expectations. I would like to do even better than they think of me. And that has its negative side too, and it's all its hang-ups that it brings into people, but it pushes people, it drives people. It's interesting, you'll often hear people in the same conversation talking about how driven Jewish people are, and how they excel, and they exceed, and they do well, or they used to, sometimes they do, and about how they're full of hang-ups and guilt complexes and parental complexes. They go together. If you want to have no complexes, then you can't be driven. If you're going to be driven, you're going to be complexed. And some people are great enough to resolve those complexes and to retain the drive as they grow and develop. But that's very hard. That's very tough. What's interesting here is in the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, it's a natural thing. People respect their parents to some degree. The question is how far it goes. I have a cousin, one of Rebbe Lopion's daughters, died in old age not very long ago, and in her illness, before she was dying, her children were taking care of her. One of her children said, I used to bring her things and take things, and she said to me, I think it was the last day of her life, she said, when you do something from me, I ask of you, please say each time, I'm doing this to fulfill the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. And he did, but it took him a long while after she died, in fact, to figure out why. Because she realized he was going to the trouble of doing the mitzvah. She didn't want him to be doing the mitzvah just out of the natural love of a child for his parent and the sympathy for a dying parent. Because then one would only get the schar, one would only get the reward of a voluntary act. She wanted to make sure that he felt the obligation that this is a mitzvah of God. That quite apart from the fact that you love me and you want to help me and you're reciprocating for a lifetime of love that I gave you, there's another dimension here too. you're also honoring the concept of parent. You're also honoring God. Be aware of that. Don't do it only for love. Do it for God too. And she taught him how to infuse the divine element of that mitzvah into something which would otherwise be a purely interpersonal one. The last piece of Gemara we'll learn before we check whether we've revisited some of these, dealt with some of the issues. Says Avimi Breda, before that, sorry, two that I want to do with you. Ki Atar Avdimi Omar, when Avdimi came, he told the following story to illustrate the limits of Kibud Avim. Once he was wearing a beautiful gold embroidered garment. And he was sitting among the leadership of Rome. You can imagine the occasion with its pomp and ceremony and the uniforms and the gold embroidery. And Rav Dimi is sitting there among this leadership. And his mother came, she must have been senile, she stripped off this garment, this gold garment, and hit him over the head with it in front of all the leadership of Rome and spat in his face. And he did not embarrass her. Doesn't tell us what he said, what he did, but he didn't embarrass her. That's the limits to which one has to be prepared to go for the concept parent, despite the way the parent has behaved in this particular incident. And finally, the Gemara says, "Tani Avimi Breid Rabbi Avo, Yesh Machil Oviv Pisuni." It is possible to provide one's parent with a meal of fat duckling, the Torah Min Ha'ilam, and you can be punished terribly for that. The Yesh Machinoi Berichayim, and you can put your father to work in a mill, driving a millstone, Umeviyul Chaya Olam Abo, and you can come to the world to come from that. What does that mean? The Gemara means, as Rashi and others explain, is it depends on the generosity of spirit. To give your parents a banquet with a mean and resentful tone, and don't think the parent can't see it. It doesn't matter how old, and it doesn't matter how seemingly disconnected, the parent can see right through it. You can provide the parent with a banquet and you can honor the parent. And there's resentfulness and meaning and meanness in the expression, in the way you do it, in the words you say. And there's no reward for that whatever. It's empty, it's negative, it's false. And you might have to put your father to work because you're poor, because there's no food, because everybody has to help. And you can encourage him and explain to him and apologize and tell him how sorry you are that he has to do that too. But that's just the reality of the situation and how much you appreciate what he's doing. And for that one can come to the world to come. It's not the magnitude of the generosity. It's the spirit with which it comes. It's the honor and the dignity with which one surrounds a parent in any situation, whether a pleasant one or an unpleasant one. The Gemara does ask and deal with the question, whose money is one meant to use in the case of Kibud Av Ve'im? Mishal mi? Whose do you use? Rav Yehuda Amar Mishal Bein, you honor the parent with your own money. Rav Nosson Barashai Amar Mishal Av. No, says Rav Nosson. Torah doesn't say this is an act of charity. This is talking about a relationship. It's not talking about spending money. It's talking about spending time, effort, thoughtfulness. And the halacha in fact is you don't have to spend the parent's your own resource, you spend the parent's resource. And if the parent has no resource, the parent is a charity case and the community must supply the resources. Sure, if one has the resources as a child, one would rather spend that on one's poor parent than on a poor stranger. But in the case Sharon mentioned, where you've got limited resources, you've got your children who you're obligated to take care of with your own money, and you have a parent who you're obligated to take care of, but not with your own money. There's no obligation if one doesn't have the resources to spend resources that one doesn't have. Of course, it's quite an interesting discussion at what point one considers not having the resources. What level of luxury is one permitted to have oneself and say, I cannot afford to take care of my parents, which is a different discussion. But the principle is that the act, the generosity, the honoring, the kindness we're talking about is not one of quantity, it's not one of money, it's not one of meaningless gesture, it's one of creating in the parent a feeling of value and a feeling of importance. And more important than it is in the parent, it is in the child. Because the child grows through that feeling and teaches their children through that feeling. There is no other way to teach a child the laws of honoring a parent.